So our opening music this morning is Komm Heiliger Geist, Herr Gott by J. Paco Bell, and Erstanden ist der Heilige Christ by J. G. Walter, and Mary Franz is performing. Thank you very much, Mary. That was wonderful. And thank you, I presume, John, for recording it. It's always nice to get a peek at our building, even though it's been a long time since we've been in it. Well, good morning and welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. My name is Barbara Park and my pronouns are she, her. I've been a member of Prairie for 40 years and I currently serve on the archives and committee, the program committee, and the ministerial search committee. And in normal times, I'm the choir director, which I think will probably be a while yet. Prairie aspires to be both an open-hearted and an open-minded congregation. We strive to be welcoming to all, although we recognize that we all have biases that limit our understanding of how others may perceive us. We stumble in our efforts, but we try to commit to keep trying to grow our ability to love people of every ethnic and religious background, whatever your color, sexuality, family structure, age, or ability. During our virtual coffee hour today, at the end of the service, we invite visitors and guests and returning friends to introduce yourselves so we might get to know you a little bit better. We'll also have our joys and concerns at that time, and then we'll break into small groups for more discussion and general chatting. We have a few announcements this morning. See the order of service, which is emailed to, you can look on Prairie News to get all of the information. We're sharing our offering this quarter with Wilma's Fund, and the link to give is in the order of service and also on the Prairie website. Monday is our final discussion of the book Breath, a Letter to My Sons by Imani Perry. Feel free to join us even if you haven't come to some of the discussions in the past. This week, Thursday, fun night is at 6:30, and everyone's welcome to attend.
Barb, your microphone is making a lot of noise.
Oh, dear.
Now it's okay.
Okay, I bet I covered it up with the paper.
Okay.
Advanced Dungeons and Dragons is on Friday, and Beginners is on Saturday. And this Saturday is our virtual women's group at 10 a.m. And all women are invited to and encouraged to join us. Okay.
The chat. I'm sorry. May I make an announcement?
You may.
So I'm Rachel. Hers. And I just wanted to make sure that people were aware there was an email that went out. But after our joys and concerns, we are going to be doing something a little bit different today. We have some members of the search committee who will be joining us to talk about the process that has been going on for identifying and welcoming a candidate to be our minister. And those of you who are interested in hearing more about the process, including the next steps, please stay on after our joys and concerns. That's a little bit different than what you announced.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I wasn't sure how that was changed. So now we'll have our chalice lighting, which this morning is by Doug Hammerschild. And please feel free to light your own chalice if you'd like to. After that, we're going to have a minute of silent meditation. And Doug Hammerschild says, each morning we must hold out the chalice of our being to receive, to carry, and to give back. Okay, now we'll have a moment. Whoopsie, that doesn't show, I don't think. Now we'll have a moment of silent meditation. Our story for all ages today is called Welcome Home, Bear by Il Sung Na.
Welcome Home, Bear, a book of animal habitats, written and illustrated by Il Sung Na. Every morning, Bear woke up in the same green forest, under the same blue sky. One day he thought, I will find a new home. So he climbed up to see Bird, but her nest was so high in the trees. He dug down to visit Mole, but it was stuffy underground and the dirt got in his nose. He went to see Goat, but standing on her steep cliff made him dizzy. He swam to Octopus, who was surprised to see him, but the ocean was too deep. He he found Polar Bear and the Puffins. But the snow was so cold under his paws. So he went to see Camel, but now his paws were hot in the desert sand. He paid a visit to Orangutan, but it rained and rained and rained. He decided to find the hippos, but there was mud everywhere. After visiting all his friends, Bear was tired. He wanted to be somewhere that was not too high, not too stuffy, not too steep, not too deep, not too cold, hot, rainy, or muddy. He knew just where he wanted to be. Why did Bear go visit all of his friends?
Well, our presentation today is What is Your Legacy? And it relates to our second principle, a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. So this morning we're welcoming three people, Laurel Ravello, Valerie Showalter, and Lila Shima, who are going to tell us about their work. So go ahead. Welcome.
Thank you so much for allowing us to join you all today and talk specifically about generational wealth. That's the area that it's a small group of us that just decided it was time to start doing something in Madison. And so we've got two projects that we're working on, and we're going to tell you about them as well as talk a little bit about generational wealth. So first, we'll briefly introduce ourselves. My name's Laurel. I've lived in Madison about 25 years now, transplant from Michigan, so Midwest all the way. And I'm a school counselor at a middle school in Madison, Wisconsin.
Good morning, friends. I am Valerie Showalter. I am the daughter of Sharon and Welby and the granddaughter of Anne and Alvin and Edith and Owen. And this morning, I'm joining you from Madison Mennonite Church, where I serve as pastor. And I moved to Madison about just a year and a half ago with my partner, Justin, who I think is actually joining us this morning, and our dog, Maggie. So it's good to be with you all. Thanks for this invitation.
Hi, I'm Lila. Thank you again, as the other two have said, for inviting us and being here with us. It's really nice to join you. Like I said, I'm Lila. I live in Madison. I grew up in a secular Jewish home, but my mom did a lot of spiritual exploring, and she spent quite a bit of time at a Universalist church. And I remember the lemon bars that we had in the basement, but I've always had a fondness for Universalists because of that, Unitarians rather. I'm not sure what the right word is. And I happen to be, I practice Zen Buddhism, and I'm in a retreat today. And it feels really appropriate and wonderful to take a break from that to be with all of you. So thank you. So I'm going to get us started talking about generational wealth, and I'm going to try to pack a lot of complexity into a few minutes. So just try to bear with me. I'll try not to talk too fast. So we're here to talk about generational wealth, but do we really know what we mean by those terms? They are pretty basic, but they have a lot of complex implications in our society. So wealth can simply be understood as the sum total of what someone owns minus what they owe. Generational wealth is wealth that accumulates in a family, handed from parents to children, generation to generation. Wealth is critical to individuals' and families' economic stability, more so than income or employment rates or other economic indicators. Wealth reflects a family's ability to overcome unexpected financial challenges. It's often the difference between whether a financial setback or emergency appears as a minor unpleasantry or leaves a family in financial ruin. Moreover, wealth provides the security to attain financial stability, take risks, and acquire additional wealth, which can then be handed down to generations. For the purposes of our group's work, we're focused on the role that whiteness has played in conferring advantages and passing on wealth. So we look through our history for countless ways the building of wealth has been boosted for white people by blocking it for Black people. Laura, you can go on to the next slide. What we see overall is a shocking and consistently growing gap between the median wealth of Black families and that of white families. Currently, that gap means white families have about 10 times more wealth than Black families. It's important to note that the racial wealth divide is expanding, not closing, as we clearly see in this graph. Between 1983 and 2016, the median Black family saw their wealth drop by more than half, and the median white family saw theirs jump by one third. While white families have largely recovered from the Great Recession, Black families have generally not. The growing racial wealth gap was further compounded by the 2017 tax cuts. And as we all know, the COVID pandemic is hitting Black people and other people harder than white people. So we're seeing the wealth gap increase still more. The Black-white wealth gap remains even among households of similar incomes. Neither differences in income nor differences in education, debt, or other demographic and socioeconomic indicators can fully account for the presence of the racial wealth gap. So how do we get here? The racial wealth divide in the United States dates back four centuries from our nation's very beginning, before that we were even a nation. It's been created and held in place by public policies. The tradition of boosting wealth building for white people by blocking it for Black, Brown, and Indigenous people began with chattel slavery, land seizure, and genocide. In every era of our nation, it has worsened, including through racist policies and systems, too many to name really, but some of them are Jim Crow laws, the National Housing Act and redlining, the National Labor Relations Act, the Social Security Act, the Fair Labor Standards Act, the GI Bill, predatory lending, the war on drugs, and mass incarceration. In our work, we focus on home ownership because it's one of the primary ways that families accumulate wealth over generations, and racist housing policies have contributed to about two-thirds of the racial wealth gap in the US. Like the racial wealth gap, there's a stark home ownership gap across race lines. Nationwide, white people own homes at a rate of 71%, while only 40% of Black people own their home. In Wisconsin, the home ownership rate among Black people is the third lowest in the nation. It's currently at 20%. So we feel it's especially important to raise awareness and work for change here in Dane County, where in every metric, racial disparity statistics are among the worst, in some cases, the very worst. And you can see the Race to Equity report if you're not familiar with that, with those statistics. So we're not here to shame or blame anyone, but just to see what is. None of us have created these harmful inequities, but we've inherited them. And if we're white, we've benefited from them. Even if we grew up poor or working class, we white people still have had more privileges, power, and access to mobility than did Black people of similar circumstances. Learning about the inequities, how they came to be, and how they're held in place, we have an exciting opportunity to come together and work for real change for the benefit of all. Personally, this learning has been tremendously meaningful for me. I was shocked a while back to learn about the stark racial disparities in Madison. I'd been living here a pretty long time, like 20 years, no, 10, 15 years, before I knew about the racial wealth gap and the disparities. But I had the luxury of being blind to it because I'm white. One time in an Alex G podcast, I heard someone call for a Black GI Bill since Black people didn't have access to the 1944 one. that really shook me awake. I thought, well, the GI benefit was open for all veterans, right? Not necessarily. So I had to realize the racist exclusion of that and other federal policies. And since then, I've been studying, listening, learning wherever I can, and looking for ways to take action. One of the efforts that I've landed upon, and I feel really lucky to have landed upon it, is this one that we're going to be telling you more about in a little while. We're focusing on the wealth gap and seeking to repair the harm that it causes. And that's my effort in life, is to find the harm and try to repair it, to do what I can, not to take for an answer like, oh, it's too big for me. I am committed to doing whatever I can, wherever I can. So I can't know the impacts of my efforts, but I'm really energized by this chance to be in a community of mutual accountability as we work for racial justice. And so now, I'm not sure if Laurel, or I think Laurel's gonna talk next.
Yeah, thanks, Lila. So I wanna give you just a teeny bit of history about me and how I've come to where I am in my understanding about racism. I grew up in a predominantly white community with a father who was an American Baptist minister and a mother who was a nurse. So my home was steeped in compassion and service. And I learned all the faith-based beliefs that we need to treat each other equally and that everyone is a children of God. Intellectually, I knew that that applied to race, but it wasn't really overtly discussed in my faith services, in my education, and even in my family home. So fast forward to 2012. I took the YWCA Racial Justice Series. It's a 3-session course. I highly, highly recommend it. It transformed my life. It opened my eyes to systemic racism that had been hidden from me before. For example, Lila mentioned the 1935 Social Security Act. That was the one that kind of floored me. Federal benefits for the old age. The thing about it is it excluded farm workers and domestic workers. Now, we can debate all day whether this was an intentionally racist act by the federal government, which I believe it was, but that's not the important part. The important part is the impact. This act and its formulation allowed more white families to be able to trust that their elderly relatives were financially taken care of, and they could spend their money on investments like college and homes, which then created generational wealth. It also meant that farm and domestic workers from predominantly Black and Brown families had to rely on their younger generations to financially support them when they became too old to work. This was just one of the things that I learned about generational wealth, and have since learned about many, many boosts that weren't necessarily blocks, that were just boosts for white families, and things that were boosts for white families and also blocks for Black and Brown families in the building of generational wealth. A book out just this month, The Whiteness of Wealth, How the Tax System Impoverishes Black Americans and How We Can Fix It by Dorothy Brown, is the next on my list to learn more. And it's just another example of how generational wealth and the ability or not to build it according to race is embedded in our systems. Another thing that I learned is that white women are actually the largest group to benefit from affirmative action. And that strikes me at a personal level. This was one of my boosts. I received a scholarship for a STEM career at a predominantly all-male college, which meant I didn't have college loans to pay off. Affirmative action, not supporting Black and Brown people, supporting white people. On another personal level, my first house was purchased with down payment support from my husband's family. Another boost because of white supremacy and all of the boosts that whites have received through the generations. I know that many of these policies were created by the federal government, and the federal government has a responsibility to repair the harm that has been created. But because I can see these boosts in my own personal life, I also see it as my personal responsibility to work towards changing the disparities in Madison. And that's why I'm part of this initiative. And I'll pass it to Valerie.
Thanks, Laurel. So Laurel and Lila have helped us cover the basics of generational wealth. Now what? What comes next? If I might back up just a hair, one of the things that we talk about in the organizing group that Laurel and Layla and I are a part of is that our work for building a more just community here in Dane County is part of a comprehensive vision for collective liberation. And I noticed in Prairie UU's bond of union that this is a priority that we share with you all. So at the surface, transforming the systems that perpetuate unequal generational wealth is a financial endeavor. And that's part of what we're doing in our work with Black homeownership. And as we think about our collective liberation, generational wealth is also about more than just finances and money in the bank or money not in the bank. In other words, this conversation around generational wealth is also about, I think, our spiritual journeys. Reflecting deeply on this issue will help us address the healing that is needed in our spirits, souls, and our bodies to break the cycle of generational trauma, of which unjust financial systems are certainly a part. So there are a couple of possible steps that we will invite you into considering as part of this presentation. And the first that I will share about is the invitation to reflect on how generational wealth impacts our spiritual journeys. One way to do this is to return to our sacred texts and ancient wisdom and to look for the stories that might teach us something about where we're at and what there is to learn about our current situation. We look to these texts to find healing and guidance for our spirits. So some of you may know the story from the Christian tradition about Zacchaeus. And as the story goes, Zacchaeus was a man who lived in the time of Jesus, around 2,000 years ago. Zacchaeus was well known in his community, for he was wealthy, very, very wealthy. Yet various members of his community viewed him differently because of his wealth. Some would have seen it as rightfully his. After all, he was a tax collector, and it was commonplace or even expected that in gathering taxes for the empire, he would add an additional fee as payment for himself. This was standard practice and had been done for some time. Perhaps his father and his father's father had done the same thing. Meanwhile, others would have questioned Zacchaeus's wealth, for they saw the undue burden his tax collecting practices put on the poor. We don't know from the story if Zacchaeus was wittingly or unwittingly propping up this financial system that benefited a few while sinking the marginalized into deeper poverty. What we do know is that he had an encounter with Jesus. And something about that conversation he and Jesus had, maybe it was a presentation, maybe it was stories that Jesus told, maybe it was a simple question that Jesus asked of Zacchaeus. But whatever it was, something about that conversation between a tax collector and a teacher shifted Zacchaeus's perspective. And at the end of their time together, Zacchaeus offered on his own accord to repair the damage he caused his community, paying back fourfold any whom he had defrauded. And the story ends with Jesus looking to Zacchaeus in the midst of his community and saying, "Today, healing has come to this house." I have personally reflected on the story many times over the last year. In the midst of our nation's ongoing struggle for racial justice, the story of Zacchaeus has revealed two invitations that I've been considering. The first invitation I hear in this story is to critically and with self-compassion reflect on my relationship with money and with wealth. Conversations, articles, books, The Justified Anger, Black History Course, these have all been my teachers on the realities and impacts of generational wealth. They have frankly and sometimes painfully revealed the way that I, like Zacchaeus, have both wittingly and unwittingly propped up an unjust financial system, a system whose vision is not collective liberation, but oppression and death. And the second invitation that I hear in the story of Zacchaeus is that my healing is inextricably linked with the healing of my community. As Zacchaeus seeks to repair the damage he has caused his neighbors, his own healing journey begins. So in closing my portion of this, I simply want to encourage you and your community to pay attention to the spiritual aspects of generational wealth and to welcome the wisdom of your sacred texts as they guide you toward healing in your quest for integrity of life. Thank you. And Laurel, back to you.
Wow. Thank you so much, Valerie. So now we want to talk about what our small group of people is trying to do in Madison to help break some of these cycles of racism. We have two initiatives. Our main goal is to strengthen initiatives that will make wealth accessible to all. Like that's the long goal. We just started, like, I don't know, 8 months ago or so. And we got together and we decided we're going to work on two things. We know that this is huge and it's not just the Black community that has been affected by this. And right now we know of an initiative that is working in the Black community to increase generational wealth. And so we're going to support that for this first year. So that's our first initiative. The organization is called Madison Roots. It's a Black-owned company dedicated to building Black wealth and home ownership within the Madison community. Our small group, are not part of Madison Roots. We don't help in the decision-making. We don't help in any kind of their processes. We solely want to support their work because we believe in it. And Madison Roots is this, their work is different in that they're a for-profit business. They are breaking traditional ways of trying to do the work in Madison. And we need that. We need lots of ways to build home ownership and wealth. And this is a different course. And so we just really thought that was valuable and thought that we wanted to support that. So what we're doing is we're just fundraising. We're asking members of the Madison community to donate $100 a month for a year to Madison Roots to support them in their work. And they have three kind of areas that they're working on: building Black generational wealth. When they do their work, they hire a Black accountant, they hire Black maintenance workers, they hire Black lawyers. So in everything they do, they're thinking about how do they build Black wealth. They're also doing some work in their community to build financial literacy and prepare people for home ownership. And the third thing that they're doing is they're acquiring rental properties to help build wealth for their companies so they can continue their work. And they're purchasing single family homes, which they will transition within 2 years to Black homeowners. So we're just giving our money to them and investing in this work in Madison. The reason you can just go and donate a one-time donation, But like Valerie and Lila have said, we're trying to think differently about this. We don't want it to be like, oh, once I did it, this is good. Start to think of it as something that this is built into my budget. This is something that is part of my healing. It's part of my community healing, and it's investment that I want to make. And so that's why we're kind of, you know, trying to ask for the regular commitment. We know that some people can't afford $100 a month. So we've also made an option for people to build a team to support for $100 a month. And that team could be 20 people. And so each person is giving $5 a month. And the idea behind that, rather than just saying, well, I'll give $5 a month, that's what I can give, is we're building community. We're talking to our neighbors about this initiative, about generational wealth, about racist policies. We're educating each other. And like Lila said, we're holding each other accountable. And so that's why we're, you know, have structured it in this way. So that's our first initiative. After I'm done talking and sharing screen, I'll put Madison Root's website, or Lila and Valerie, if you want to put Madison Root's website in the chat, so you all can have it to read a little bit more about them. Or if you do want to make a one-time donation, you know, we fully support that as well. The second initiative that we're doing is, as the three of us said, we didn't really come to understanding about generational wealth until we were adults. And I know for me, well into adulthood. And we know that there are Madisonians that have good hearts, that are generous people, that want a better community. And yet, because of our white supremacist system, all of these racist policies have been hidden from us, have been blocked from our view, and people just don't know. They just don't know. And so we want to give an opportunity to build knowledge. So we've developed a generational wealth workshop. It's 90 minutes long. It's meant for groups of people. Prairie UU could decide to offer the generational wealth workshop as a community, but each one of you are members of communities. Maybe it's sports teams, maybe it's a book club, maybe it's your neighborhood association. We're also giving these workshops to all different types of communities. A minimum of 12 participants, and it's not required, but we're requesting that when we give the presentation, that a $100 to $300 stipend will be given to Madison Roots. Wow, we are spot on time for our 25 minutes. I got 1 minute left. And with that, we will leave with the quote for reparations by Ta-Nehisi Coates. Reparations, by which I mean the full acceptance of our collective biography and its consequences. It is the price we must pay to see ourselves squarely. What is needed is an airing of family secrets, a settling with old ghosts. What is needed is a healing of the American psyche and the banishment of white guilt. So with that, I know that I didn't specifically tell you how to get involved with the, you know, if you want to be part of the team that's supporting Madison Roots on a yearly basis, or the generational wealth workshops, we will all put our email addresses in the chat. You can reach out to us. We'll share the ways that you can get registered for either of those. So we're ready for questions.
Thank you so much. Well, if you have a question or a comment, just either physically raise your hand or do it virtually raise your hand. And I see Nancy's hand already.
Laurel, I had a question about your workshop. I was just curious, where did you get the curriculum for that, or what does that involve?
Ooh, that's an excellent question. I'm gonna let Lila take it.
Yeah, our workshop started out from one that Freedom Inc. offered a while back. Freedom Inc. is an organization in town that you should look up if you don't know about them. They're doing really good work in town and in the nation. So Freedom Inc. offered this 2-day, I think it was a 2-day workshop originally. I wasn't part of that, but one of the members of our group was. And so she, with the blessings of Freedom Inc., she worked with us to rework that two-day workshop on generational wealth and racial wealth gap and create a 90-minute one. So it's based in that, but we're doing it a bit, you know, it's morphing as it had to become smaller. Yeah, I guess I'll stop with that.
Thank you. Katrina, you had a question?
Yeah, just a comment. Actually, I put this in the chat, but I wanted to make sure everyone knew that we already have a team that is donating monthly, and anyone here is welcome to join us. If you go to the website that Valerie put in the chat, madisonroots.com, there's a button to donate, and then there's a space where you can write that you're doing it for Team Prairie. And I just set up like a reminder on my calendar, so once a month I go in and add my donation to Team Prairie, and then also I get an email like once a month reminding me if I have forgotten. So I hope those of you who haven't joined our team yet will do so.
Katrina, could you put out a Prairie, put that all that information out in Prairie News?
Sure.
Okay.
Thank you, Katrina, for mentioning that. And I just want to say, if you want to get the monthly email, you can email me and then I'll put you on our list so that you'll get the monthly reminder. But otherwise, if you want to, you know, do it on your own to the Madison Roots website, however works best for you.
Molly, I see your virtual hand raised.
I am here. My question is about the Madison Roots program. Can it be, Katrina says she makes a contribution intentionally every month. Can it be set up for direct payments out of your accounts? Do you know that?
Great question. It absolutely can. Most banks require a phone number to do that. And I have the phone number. It's somewhere in my email, not easily accessible. So maybe what I can do is email it to Renee or Katrina, and they can include it in the news that you're talking about, that if you want to set up something with your bank account, how to do it.
And then just a quick follow-up, Laurel. I think Madison Roots, it's a pretty new initiative. Do you know what they've been able, have they been able to do anything concrete yet? Have they been able to come up with enough capital?
Yeah, great question. So we actually started with a GoFundMe last summer. And we raised, I want to say it was about $60,000, and they purchased two multi-units. One is currently rented fully, and the other they're doing a little bit of upgrading in the kitchen, the bathroom to prepare it for rental. I know they're still searching for houses. Thank you for asking that question, because you reminded me of one important thing. Vanessa McDowell is, and Kamal Calloway are the two owners of Madison Roots. And Vanessa grew up on the south side of Madison. And I don't know how many of you are aware, but the south side of Madison is blowing up in terms of development. And a lot of people are coming in and scooping up those homes, gutting them, and then selling them for like three times the price that they once were. And so part of Madison Roots initiative is to make sure that the south side of Madison isn't gentrified. So they're really looking in south side of Madison right now to purchase their homes. And so I know that they're actively putting in offers, and I haven't heard recently whether they've acquired any single family homes.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Other questions? Somebody just, Penny? You have to unmute yourself, Penny.
How would just one get a hold of Madison Roots for them to do a presentation for them, for us? Because I have questions for them. Like, you know, why are they leaving on the table the tax deductibility? I mean, I would be more likely to give more if I could deduct it from my taxes. So how do we get a hold of them to have them do a program?
I think Renee has reached out to them. I'm not sure if they are have, you know, said that they are interested. I know that when you are a nonprofit, there are a lot of restrictions and complications that you have to, you know, jump through all these hoops and fill out all these reports. And Madison Roots wants to do something different. You know, Vanessa McDowell right now is the CEO of the YWCA. So she understands the nonprofit world and has dealt in the nonprofit world. And they just decided that they can do their work better by not having kind of that piece. Also, the nonprofit world, you know, unfortunately, I'm going to say it, is inherently racist, right? Like, so they just don't want to be part of that system. They just want to do something different, and they want to, you know, build their small business. Many, many small businesses have been supported. Many white small businesses have been supported through generational wealth, and they just see like their small business can get support.
Other questions? If I don't see your hand, just speak up because I can't see everybody. Okay, seeing none. Our closing words today are by Maya Angelou. Surviving is important. Thriving is elegant. And the closing music is going to be performed again by Mary Franz. And the music is by J.G. Walther. And it is, I'm not going to get this one right. Erschinen ist der Heiligtag und möcht dich mein Geist beleicht. Thank you. Thank you for that lovely music, Mary. And also thank you, Laurel, Valerie, and Lila for the presentation today. I think many of us learned a lot, so we really appreciate it.